KPCW News Time now, 8:11. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the local news hour here on KPCW. Well, the grand opening of the new Whole Foods store scheduled for next Wednesday, October 18th. In the studio with a taste of what we can look forward to, I have store spokeswoman Debbie LaBelle. Good morning, Debbie.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So right now, you've got lots of sales going on at the existing store, just kind of making way to
we
so you don't have to move
do.
As much?
Yes.
So a good time to go shopping.
It's a great time to go shopping at Whole Foods.
So when does the actual move happen?
So we'll be closing our existing store on Sunday, October 15th in the evening, and then we'll be opening on Wednesday, the 18th,
okay.
The new store.
So you've just got, what, trucks moving back and forth?
A little bit. Yes, we're a little busy right now just preparing for the new store, but we're very excited.
All right. So what happens to the old store? Any idea of what where that lease is going to?
So I believe it's kind of a secret. we've heard some different rumors, but we don't have any solid information right now.
Okay. Now, do you own the new store? I mean, because I think you were leasing the existing store, yeah? Or is it still a lease operation?
It's still a lease operation right at this time.
Okay. Well, then let's get to the highlights and what do we have to look forward to? Is it Landmark Drive or is it Kilby Road?
It's Landmark Drive.
Okay.
It's 6598 Landmark Drive is the address.
Okay. So what are you most excited about?
I think we're most excited about a few different things. The Silver Mine Tap Room is going to be amazing. It's a first in Utah for Whole Foods Market. So we're going to have an expansive menu of artisan foods available for lunch and dinner. And we're also going to have 24 local brews on tap as well as wine by the glass. Very
wow.
Exciting, yes.
So is that kind of separated off somewhere just because the 21 and older?
It is kind of off in a corner, yes, absolutely. So we're excited about the tap room. That's definitely a first. Another first is our Ritual Hot Chocolate and Coffee Bar. So Ritual is an amazing local company, and they have this amazing bean-to-bar chocolate. They make hot chocolate as well as all the different coffee drinks. They'll have a chocolatier on tap there doing truffles, and they'll also be doing artisan toast. So we're very excited for that. That's a first.
Okay. And then in terms of the store size, I mean, you're nearly doubling the existing square footage.
We are nearly double. We have 43,000 square feet versus 24,000 square feet, the old store. So it'll be much bigger, just a lot more seating as well. So there'll be about 100 seats available for people to sit and hang out. There's a lot of nooks and crannies to hang out in, and we probably had about 20 seating for 25 in the old store, so much more space.
So it'll have more of the feel of like your Trolley Square store?
Yes, I would say that's probably the closest that it would have the feel of.
Yeah, because I mean, as the store kind of caught on, you only had that small thing, and it just seemed like the shelves went up and narrower, maybe, and it just felt
right.
We're gonna have a lot more arm room.
Yes, we're very excited to be able to offer this to our locals as well as our tourists. We'll just have a lot more space.
Okay. And in terms of what you've always done with, natural and organic produce and things like that, that remains just more choice?
Yes, we'll have all the same great things that we had before, but we'll have a lot more options. So the Hot Bar is another standout place. We'll have tons more Hot Bar options. We'll have somewhere like 16 soups available, which is a lot bigger than our previous store. And we'll also have some different food venues. We'll have a sushi and ramen bar venue. We'll also have a cold pressed juice bar, which is really awesome. There's 9 different juice taps, and you can actually mix and match and make your own custom juice blend. So that's great. Ceviche and poke bar is another thing that we're going to have that's new at the store. And we're also going to have a Neapolitan style self-serve pizza that's ready in 7 minutes.
Okay. And then what about, I mean, you mentioned juice bar. How about the kombucha tap? Are you going to have one of those as well?
We, at this time, are not going to have a tap, but we are looking to have one very soon.
Okay. So bigger space, does that mean more staff?
We'll definitely have more staff. We're actually employing an additional 30 to 40 new team members at this new store, which is very exciting for our community. Lots of new jobs available.
Are those part-time, full-time?
They're both part-time and full-time, and we are still hiring. So all different departments, customer service, meat department, catering, you name it, we're hiring.
Right. How do people do that?
So they just go to the Whole Foods Market website and find the Park City store and careers.
Okay. And in terms of the hours, What are we looking at?
So our hours are 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. Opening day, however, we're going to open at 9.
Okay. And that's 7 days a week?
7 days a week.
All right. And is that similar to what you offer now?
Yes, it's very similar. We're currently open at night till 9:30, so we're open a half an hour later, which is awesome.
Okay. And then in terms of the Utah products, I know that was something that you hope to showcase as well. Can you talk about some of those?
Yes, yes. We have about 75 local vendor partners, and we're hiring on, or we're partnering with more new local vendors every single day. Park City Brewery is a great one in our store. We have Jaffel's, Red Rock Brewery, Ritual Chocolate, obviously, Licked Pops, and all different kinds. So many local vendors that are amazing.
Okay. And certainly something that has been a concern since day one is just how this is going to work now, accessing it off of Landmark. Do you think you have that figured out in terms of the parking and the...
We do think we have it figured out. We have more than double the parking spaces than we had at the old store. So definitely the parking will be easy to do. We've been in and out quite a bit over the last few months, and its traffic is very smooth. So we feel like it's going to be good.
Right. So is there, and I, since I haven't been out there, is it so coming in from like the Pinebrook area, making that left-hand turn into the store, is there a designated turning lane to make that left turn?
There is a turning lane there that makes it a little more smooth and easy.
Okay. And then if you were turning left out of the store to go towards the library or something, there's also a, what do we call them, suicide lanes?
Yeah, there's also a little lane there to make it easier.
So we're not requiring a right-hand turn and then having to come through the roundabout.
Right. We do get a left turn out of there.
Okay. All right. Anything else you think people ought to know about it?
I want everybody to know about our opening day fun. I hope everybody comes out to see us. We have some amazing things. Again, we open at 9. We're going to be giving an exclusive reusable bag away to the first 2,000 people. We have all kinds of prizes, live music all day, special deals, and local food samples. So it's going to be amazing.
Okay. Debbie, thanks for coming in.
Thank you so much.
It's 8:24. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. The Park City Council meets in work session Thursday to interview a couple of candidates for the Public Art Advisory Board before retreating into closed session. That will follow with a reopening of the work session at 4 o'clock in the studio with a rundown of some of the agenda items. I have Budget Manager Nate Rockwood, City Manager Diane Foster will be joining us in a minute. Hi, Nate.
Hi. Good morning.
Let's see. Let's kind of turn to the issues that you'll be tackling here on Thursday's meeting. During the regular meeting, you'll be giving the first quarter 2018 budget report. It looks like so far so good.
Yeah, so far so good. I mean, it's obviously before the season has started, and so this is just a quick check-in to see where revenues are and how the budget's been going, but never really a huge indicator of what type of season we're going to get, depending on the snow.
Well, I mean, do we have these funds so cushioned, though, that it's really not even a challenge to stay on budget?
Yeah, I would say that we budget somewhat conservatively. So if we have anywhere close to a good or average season, then we're usually okay. And then as sometimes we get a really good season, then more revenue comes in and we're able to allocate that towards projects or other operating issues that we've been working on.
Right. So looking at the chart that you provided, we've got, I believe, $11.5 million budgeted this fiscal year for property tax revenues. That's going to be up $400,000 from last fiscal year. So do we attribute that to new growth?
A little bit of that is new growth. I think we're going to see a lot more new growth next year. It takes a little bit for the assessment to catch up with what is really happening. And I think a little bit more new growth has happened than that. But yeah, that is attributed to new growth.
Okay. And then sales tax revenues expected to go up $1.2 million from the 2017 fiscal year. That's a lot. I mean, how can that be?
We've continued to see in the last 3 years that sales revenue have gone up close to 10% each year. This revenue isn't actually anticipating that big of a growth, but we continue to see a lot of growth. A lot of that can be attributed to the Vail Epic Pass, bringing more people to town.
Okay. And that was going to be my question, because the passes are being sold in Park City as opposed to the Canyon space. So now that it's one resort, everything gets...
Well, The passes are sold all over the country. It's really where you use the pass. Part of that money goes to the location that you use the pass at. So if people use it 10 times and 5 of the times are in Park City, that, you know, half of that cost of that pass comes to Park City. If someone buys it in Colorado and they do one trip to the city, we get part of that, you know, part of that pass revenue comes to the city, even though it was purchased in Colorado.
And then what about if somebody buys the pass here and then shows up at the Canyons Village base?
Then that would go to the base of the Canyons Village for when they use that. But if they use it 5 times at the Canyons base and 5 times in town, then it'll be split between the two places. So everybody's getting sort of their fair piece of the revenue.
That's significant, though, because I was looking, you know, sales tax revenue in 2015, $7.4 million. And again, we're talking about things going up to over $11 million.
It's significant. And I think we see that in the number of people that we see in town. And also, you know, when they bring new people into town, more people go eat on Main Street, more people shop, all that adds up, and that's what we're seeing.
Okay. And then is there anything that you, I mean, what do we do with the sales tax revenues? I mean, do they go to certain funds, or is it just all get dropped into the general fund?
No, they go to different funds. So some of it goes into the general fund. Some of it goes into the transit fund. You know, a few years ago, the city voted for the additional resort sales tax. That all goes towards those capital projects that were on the ballot at that time, and they continue to go towards that. So we divide it up through the budget into the different categories that those funds are supposed to be funding.
Okay. Let's see. Council will be holding a public hearing to receive input with regard to the issuance of some $40 million in sales tax revenue bonds. And again, this was for affordable housing and then the purchase of the Arts and Culture District in the Bonanza Park area?
Yeah, so there's actually three different sales tax funding sources. One of them is for the affordable housing projects that are going forward, and so that was planned in the budget. And the Lower Park RDA is actually the one backing those sales revenue bonds. A big chunk of it is from the transient room tax that's going into effect January 1st. That is going to pay for the land initially for that Arts and Culture District. But that is a partnership with Kimball Art Center and Sundance Institute, where they'll buy their portion of the land. We'll take the money and from the TRT and put it into infrastructure to support that whole Arts and Culture District. And then the third piece of this $40 million bond is to continue those additional resort sales tax projects. So the Old Town Street projects, the Brew Pub Plaza project, and you know, potentially some other projects that are associated with that tax.
Yeah, so I guess I thought the council had already approved the bonding for this, and now we're having a public hearing. What happens?
They do. So within the state code, then they approve a resolution authorizing the issuance of the bond, but there's several stages in there where the code requires that we have additional public hearing just to make sure that you're getting that message out. And so that's what this is. This is coming back. They authorized that it would be advertised in the paper and that there would be a public hearing on this date. And so this is just following up with that public hearing.
Yeah, but I guess, I mean, it sounds like we've put the cart before the horse here. What if people come back and say, absolutely not, then what?
Well, that authorization just starts the process, and so we continue to go through and, you know, go to the rating agencies, get a rating, go and put it on the market. We really, at any point up until the sale of that bond, can stop that. So if public hearing comes in tonight, which is information that the city council wasn't aware of, they could potentially say, we're not going to sell these bonds. So it's a whole process that we're going through.
And in fact, Leslie, one of the things I think that city council will hear occasionally is, the idea that, the city shouldn't do this because we're over leveraged. We just did Bonanza Flats and now we're doing this. And that's one of the reasons I wanted Nate to come on today, because I think we are in an incredibly good financial position as a city. And, financially, Nate takes a very conservative approach, and I think it'd be good for folks to hear him talk about that.
We talked a little bit about that, about how funds are kind of cushioned in the event of something, not happening as planned. But what in the event of, what if we relived, 2008 and 2009 all over again?
Yeah, and that's exactly the way that we have this set up, is with each of these funding sources, we don't over leverage them. None of these are property tax, but when you look at the property tax side, related to Bonanza Flat, the state limits you to 4% of your total value. The city then limits to 2%, so we cut that in half. Right now, we're about just under 0.5%, so we're nowhere near leveraged anywhere near on property tax what we could be. But with each one of these sales tax, I've gone back and looked at what happened in 2008 and 2009, and our sales tax revenue dropped between 20 and 25% during that period. And so with all of the revenue bonds against each one of these sales revenue, I never have it leveraged in any single year beyond 65%. So we've kind of got a 10% cushion. If we went through another, great recession for a couple of years, we would still be able to make the debt service payment on these plus some. And the other good thing about all of these projects is they're all going towards capital projects. And so if there were a recession, you could delay those capital projects and just not use that revenue. So very conservative approach, but also using, I think, the economic engine that the city is to actually go after and do the goals that we're looking to do.
So what this means is that we have the $40 million in bonds. Those are going to be paid back with future sales tax revenues.
Exactly.
So when we're only collecting, it sounds like a lot, but if we're only collecting $11 million that is already being spent, what happens then to... it takes a long time to pay back, or we have to then pull funding back from other projects that sales taxes are currently funding?
Well, the 11% doesn't include the TRT. So the TRT comes into place on January 1st, and so that wouldn't be included in that. And then the other thing is that the money paying for the affordable housing actually comes from the Lower Park RDA money, which wouldn't be included in that as well. So really the only piece when we're looking at that budget report that we were just talking about that does come and pay for this bond would be some of that additional resort sales tax money. We're only bonding for about $8 million, we're only bonding for about $4.5 million for that piece. So it's really not a big chunk of that $11 million there. We've leveraged other sources which come in.
All right. So what's the status of the Arts and Culture District? We're still planning to go ahead with the purchase of this, but right now we only have letters of intent. What if we go forward with this and say Sundance and or Kimball Arts Center decide to back out? Then what? We just have property?
Yeah, at that point you have property and you have the city leading sort of the charge on what we do with that property. But I think what's exciting and where we're going right now is this week we're also adopting or the council's approving a contract for an arts and culture consultant that's coming in. And this is really a very, very first stage of kind of designing and figuring out what this arts and culture district is going to be. So we went around in partnership with Kimball and Sundance and found several of these consultants around the country that just go in and create these arts districts. They go in and say, how do they function? How do they make money? What are their financial, operations look like? How do you program them to be successful? So this contract that we're proposing signing today isn't for a design team to come in. It's really for someone to come in and lead that vision session with Kimball and Sundance and the city, and then also go out and do quite a lot of public outreach, going to meeting with stakeholders to kind of understand what Park City is and what an arts district in Park City would look like, helping the city lead several open houses so that we can gather more information, and then really coming back and saying, this is what would work in Park City. This is what would work for the demographics that you have visiting town, in town. This is how you make your goals and really working with us to get those goals. And then what we do with that information is then we go out and find the design team and say, we have these criteria, we have these goals, we know what we want it to feel like and operate like. Now we're going to go and hire someone who can design that. So that's the stage that we're kind of at now.
So this consultant contract that we're talking about is almost $100,000. That's just for the first two phases, a third phase still to come. So how much are we budgeting for all three phases here?
Well, actually, the contract is for all three phases. The two and three phase are kind of combined together. So the first phase is the initial phase that takes the most time takes the most effort, hours. And that'll be done in the next 2 to 3 months that we'll have that phase. Now, phase two and three go actually through the designing process, and then phase three goes through the construction process. So, yeah, there's a $100,000 contract, but it's over probably 3 years or even 4 years that contract goes. And the phase two and three is really just an oversight to come in and look at what the design team is doing and say, yeah, you're still meeting the goals and the vision that we kind of set up for the community in the phase one sort of visioning process. So not a whole lot of money there, but just sort of an outside consultant to say, yeah, you're on track or you're not on track.
And again, I mean, all we have are letters of intent. At what point are Sundance and Kimball Arts Center vested in this?
I think that they become vested. What we've agreed to as a city is that we'll get this through the entitlement process. Once we have the MPD in place with the buildings in place and the programming in place, then we'll say, okay, we've delivered the product. Now it's your chance, or it's your time, and we'll have purchase agreements with them. And we'll execute those purchase agreements for them to buy the land, start constructing their buildings while we construct our portion of the project.
Okay, Dan, I'm going to leave it there because I got a couple of other issues. Thanks for your time. And then, Diane, real quick, a discussion with regard to the Triple Crown service contract and work session. The existing contract expired this year, and for the future, Park City wants to reduce the contract from 6 years to three. So it's just in accordance with what the council did for, say, like the Silly Market?
It's actually quite similar to what the city did for Silly Market. There are three major issues here. One being that the city wants to reduce the amount of funding that it contributes, and it's done that with the Silly Market as well. The second one is to limit property, and there's been discussions over the year with Silly Market about coming up Main Street, et cetera, and we've kind of managed their footprint, and there is a farmer's market next to the post office, but largely it happens on Lower Main. And in this case, City Council wants to limit what happens in City Park. And there are three pieces to this one, the term of the contract, and that is the third piece, and City Council wants to be able to have this come back more frequently, and these are consistent with what we've heard from SEAC as far as we want to keep tight reins on these types of things. Now, that being said, the you'll see in the staff report, Triple Crown does provide economic support in a time of year where our average daily room rates are a lot lower. And in fact, I think they're around half of what they are in peak season winter. So while we do want to manage our events, and I think the team at the city, led by Jenny Dearson and Jonathan Weidenhammer, have been quite successful in mitigating impacts. That's what they've heard from City Council. There is still an interest in having events and trying to limit how much they impact locals.
Yeah, but again, that is the City Park is kind of the showcase of their event. Why would we not want to let them do that?
The City Council was specifically just because of feedback we've received from them on past events, the idea here was to get it out of kind of the residential area and keep it in areas that are like the high school, which are less impact directly on residents. We'll see where City Council goes with this one. The organizers are actually coming out, and they'll be, we believe, specifically asking to stay in City Park.
All right. And the Historic Park City Alliance has sent out a survey for people asking them for their impact. How much will that impact the council's decision here?
You know, the City Council very much listens to its business organizations. The Historic Park City Alliance is a very important one. And, you know, City Council, no matter what the issue, it's always a balancing act, and it's balancing providing that economic engine with mitigating and minimizing impacts on the residents.
All right. And I just wanted to make a note at 4:45, you got an hour plus discussion with regard to the Main Street Plaza uses. This was continued from last week. The council basically needs to figure out what will be allowed there and whether or not we do that through the special events process or put in a administrative use policy?
Mm-hmm. This is one that we really do want people to show up for. Council member Nan Worrell asked for this. A lot of times we do this later in the process of construction. She wanted to get ahead of this and say, let's talk about this right up front. And this, again, is a balancing act between having vibrancy at the top of Main Street, which was one of the initial goals of that, and also then not burdening the residents. And so how do you find a balance to that? The administrative policy, the only place we do that right now is at the White Barn, and that really does kind of lock down what can happen there. Staff is recommending that we use the special events policy, and City Council, we can talk to them at any point about that.
Okay. Diane, Nate, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Well, the Park City Chamber Bureau is teaming up once again with the Park City Board of Realtors to host a candidate forum. In the studio with details, I have Bill Malone, president of the Chamber Bureau. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning, Leslie.
So this is an interesting partnership, the Chamber and the Board of Realtors. I guess other than that they're Park City's two largest economic engines, I mean, any other reason why these two organizations?
We have a very interesting one because our chairman of the board, or chairperson of the board, is Sarah Werbelow this year, and she is also the president of the Board of Realtors this year. So she's pulling double duty with two organizations. And so I just thought that was kind of ironic that I don't think that's ever happened before. But we've always had this relationship with the Board of Realtors in terms of a candidate forum, and we're just continuing with that.
Yeah. So do you think the business people, the lodge, because you represent the business people, the lodging people, and then we've got, of course, the real estate industry. I mean, do you think they have different issues in terms of who we elect?
I think there are different questions that come from different audiences based on you know, their economic profile and as to what they do in the community. But there's a lot of similarities as well. I mean, I think when you look at the questions that are posed by someone in the real estate industry, are the same as, in many respects, are the same as questions that anyone in lodging or retail or ski business would probably ask as well.
Yeah, we've got a number of intelligent citizens running, wanting to do the job. I mean, does it really make a difference?
Make a difference to
and who wins? Yeah.
Oh, I think there are nuances, obviously, with the different candidates, and they come from different backgrounds and may have different opinions on it. But it's always good to provide the opportunity for, as you guys do at the radio station all the time, to hear how do they feel about workforce housing and where, and let's talk about the arts and cultural you know, concept and how did that come about? And it allows candidates to kind of digress from there and maybe give a little bit of a sneak peek as to how they govern.
Yeah, and that's kind of interesting. I mean, you bring up that 1% transient room tax, you know, that's scheduled to go into effect January 1, and certainly the art lovers of town, it's like, oh, that's a great idea. And yet some of your client or members, I guess, are just, it's like, wait, what?
It kind of came out of the gate very quickly. It was a done deal. When the lodging community or the business community was brought in to the conversation, there's some frustration with it. I don't think there's frustration with the project. I think there's a little bit of maybe a feeling of cart before the horse to now have a consultant that will tell us what it's supposed to be after it's done. That's could be a little frustrating. But also I think the frustration level on the part of lodging was the fact that this is put into on a January 1 basis in the middle of the ski season, middle of the Christmas season, where a lot of the reservations are already done and going back to those guests and adjusting their rates based on the fact that that the tax rate changed in the middle of their Christmas vacation. That there's some frustration on the part of the lodging community with that. Typically, I think we've always kind of found that sales tax changes usually occur in April or July.
Right. That's what I was going to mention. Yeah, it seems like even the state does that. Yeah. Well, tell us the timeline of Friday's events. I mean, you've got free lunch for people.
Yeah, free lunch is always good here. It's 11:45 to 1 o'clock, and it's at the Santee Auditorium this Friday. Leslie, you'll be the moderator of it. And Lunch, like we said, lunch will be provided, and please be prompt. We'd like to get started at 11:45 on that, and you can grab a sandwich or something there to eat. And it's usually fun for everyone except probably the candidates sometimes on those. But knowing the candidates for mayor and city council, I think they'll have fun with it also.
Well, that's how I'm promoting it. Free lunch. I'll be grilling the candidates. So come join us. Okay. And in terms of the questioning, I know that some of that has certainly come from the legislative committee of the Board of Realtors. Did the chamber put?
Yeah, we submitted a few questions into there as well. But generally, I think, you know, what the legislative committee of the Board of Realtors came up with are pretty broad questions that appeal to everyone in the community.
All right. And will there be a chance for the audience to ask questions as well? We've got that timed.
I believe that's built into the time as well.
Okay. Well, while I've got you here, I've got just a couple of minutes. You'll be at the Summit County Council meeting today talking about the summer season. Can you give us the Reader's Digest version?
Yeah, sure. We kind of were up and down different months of the summer, but overall it appears that and summer we refer to as May through October. We were down in August. We were up in July this year. Interesting, we didn't have the Tour of Utah this August. We think that was a little bit of what transpired there, but up significantly in September and October. Now, granted, they're on smaller numbers, but our group sales business has been really, really strong this year. We're lots of meetings. In fact, if you look at the daily occupancy report for the community just now, like through the month of October, our weekdays are much bigger than our weekends in terms of overnight occupancy. So it's kind of it's where the calendar kind of flip-flops to a lot less weekend traffic. And weekend traffic that we do get is usually last minute, basically looking at the weather forecast on Wednesday and whether you want to come for the weekend. But our business travel, and especially our corporate business travel that's taking place in town, has been probably the biggest part that has made summer our summer season stronger this year than in the past.
And a quick look, I mean, what are you looking at for winter bookings at this point?
It's really, really early to tell. We've kind of, you know, peek under the tent and look all the way into February. And while we're very strong in some of those, up a few percent to where we were last year at this time in terms of bookings, it's still such a small piece of the total pie. It's hard to make any real projections about winter yet.
Yeah. In the school districts, we use October 1 as the enrollment count. Do you have a date that you kind of look at to compare then season to season?
Yeah, we do winter as November through April and summer's May through October.
Yeah. Did you have a look at date, though?
Oh, yeah. When we take a snapshot looking, this was a snapshot. Our last snapshot was taken on September 30th, looking forward into the winter. And so, granted, you'll see a lot of strength around the Christmas holidays because that gets booked really early. But, you know, really still January is our strongest booking month for winter business.
All right. And then real quick, of course, the transient room tax talks have kicked off between the chamber and Summit County. So far, so good.
Yeah, we're talking, you know, it's coming along. There's a couple of things that, you know, I think we've gotten out of the way early on in terms of agreement that we would, you know, we have a timeline that we want to accomplish this so that we can plan for the future. We also we enjoy the fact, and we hope that the county does, that the fact that we do need longer term agreements when it comes to this so that we can plan for the future. I mean, that's how we put the bid together for the 2019 Freestyle, Free Skiing, Snowboard World Championships. These things are done many years in advance, and to have a knowledge that we do have that money to use for those projects, just as the fact that we have a 10-year agreement with Sundance Institute for the film festival, we need to know, have, you know, a solid background that we're going to be able to enter into those agreements.
Okay. Bill, hey,
great.
Thanks for coming back.
Hey, thanks.
It's Bill Malone, President. KPCW News Time now, 8:53. Good morning. Well, the mayor of Midway, Colleen Bonner, looking to be reelected to a second term. She joins me now in the studio. Good morning, Colleen.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Out of breath.
Yeah. Lots of traffic this morning.
Yeah. Okay. Well, just tell us a little bit about yourself and why you hope to be reelected.
Well, I have served with Midway City on the council for 12 years, and then I've been the mayor for the last 4 years. I've been a resident of Midway for 25 years. However, my ancestors helped settle the community, and I have a great love and respect for those who served before me, and I have enjoyed the time that I've spent there and hope to be able to serve again.
Yeah, so in addition to the public service, I mean, what's your background?
So I am a hairdresser. I've had my own business. I've had a business for 30 years, and 25 of that has been in Midway. I have 4 children and 2 grandchildren, and I just, you know, love being a part of the community and spending time with friends and family.
Now, you were not in support of the open space bond initiative that was recently voted down by City Council. How come?
You know, that's not really true. It's not that I wasn't supportive of the bond issue itself. It was the timing of that bond issue. We are in the middle of a moratorium to be able to get all of the recommendations from our general plan that we adopted in January. We were trying to get those all those recommendations put into code, and it takes quite a while. So we did a moratorium for 6 months, and we're right in the middle of that. And to do a bond initiative to be able to get the information that needs to go on a bond to the public, to give them a good education on what they are voting for, would have taken almost 2 months out of that 6 month moratorium. And it's not that I know that the citizens have to vote on stuff like that. It's important. And yes, we had a group of people who had done some work, but it was up to the city to be able to do that final leg of that. And we just didn't feel like there was time to be able to do it right and to be able to get everything else in the city done that needed to be done. And so we felt like it was better not to push it through and race it through, but to take some time. And we've formed an open space committee now, and they're going to be tasked with identifying and coming up with what a definition of open space means, so that there's a clear definition that when we put the bond out, people understand what their money's going to be used for.
What do you think your constituents' biggest issues are this campaign?
She's wanting to...
No, your constituents.
My constituents.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, what are they telling you? What are the big issues?
The big issues of what people are telling me? Mm-hmm. They are concerned about growth in Midway. They're concerned about open space. They're concerned about changes. You know, most people don't want Midway to change at all. They want it to stay just like it is. And as much as I would love for that to happen, I think we've got good codes in place that will help it to grow carefully. And can we redefine some of those and make it better? Yeah. And so that's what we're doing right now.
So do you think those issues are any different than they were 4 years ago?
Nope. They're about the same as they've been for the last 20 years.
So given that, if you were given a grade for what you have accomplished from what you set out 4 years ago, what do you think that grade would be?
I think I've done a good job. I think as a mayor and the council, as we've worked together, I think we've done a good job. We work really hard to look at the codes and to redefine things if we feel like they need change. We send things back to the Planning Commission all the time to look at, to help us to, you know, make better decisions. But I think we've got good things in place.
Your opponent is concerned about Midway losing, I think, $500,000 now that it's no longer considered a resort town and won't be able to collect that resort city sales tax. Did Midway blow it here? Or is that exactly what you intended?
You know, it's interesting as I look back at when that tax was initiated, we were almost out of the ability to collect that tax at the time we initiated that tax. It was shortly after that that we had already outgrown that, you know, with development and stuff that was already in place. So it was good for a few years, you know, maybe 5-6 years, but we have a 10-year window. And, it's important that we look at that. It's important that we look at how things grow in the future and what we do. However, we had a huge growth period in 2005 and 2006, which was about the time that this tax was first initiated. And so it's important that we look at that. I think we can figure out in our budget how to fix that. We are working and looking at some ideas. We would require right now roughly around 400 new hotel rooms if we were to try and keep that tax. So we're just working to try and fix it.
So is that what you hope to do then, is to recover that?
You know, I would love to recover that. I don't know. I think we'll get resistance from the community even for that. You know, if we increase the resort areas. We have areas that are zoned resort, but we get a lot of resistance for any new growth of any kind. And so I think we're going to have to find a balance.
Certainly, one of the actions that was taken during this last 4 years was, as a member of the Heber Light and Power Board, you voted to give the general manager $238,000 severance package. This happened, of course, during the embezzlement case with Tony Furness. I mean, why was that decision made? I mean, that's a hefty severance package there.
You know, when I got there, there were all the codes and policies in place. And, you know, our board looked at things and we needed to go. Heber Light and Power needed to go in a different direction. And we just felt like that was what was on the books for him to get paid. And we just said, let's go a new direction. He was part of there was a kind of a gray cloud hanging over Heber Light and Power at that time. And we wanted to clean things up and just move forward.
You didn't just fire him and say goodbye?
You know, when you legally, it didn't seem like we could do that. That was the legal counsel that we were given was to pay the severance and just move on.
Okay. I need to leave it there. Colleen, thanks for your time this morning.
Okay.
That's Colleen Bonner again, the mayor of Midway, again looking to be reelected to a second term. You're